No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I hope my show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. And today we have a special guest, Representative Gloria Johnson from Tennessee. Ms. Johnson was a school teacher for 27 years and was elected in 2012 to the State House in Tennessee. And unless you've been living under a rock, you know that she's also the brave person that stood up on the floor of the legislature in Tennessee to protest against gun violence, and along with Representatives Justin Preston and Justin James, was admonished for that activity. Only she was the only one that wasn't expelled. The other two representatives, who just happened to be Black, were expelled. So can we start there? Welcome to the show, Representative Johnson. Thanks so much for your service.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it, and I'm happy to be here. Yeah, we can certainly start there. We, the three of us, one day when we were being silenced on the floor, we were not allowed to speak up about the thousands of protesters who were there. It was parents and toddlers and teenagers, all kinds of students who were there protesting gun violence and asking us to do something about it. And the three of us wanted to recognize that they were there. They were in our rotunda. They were in our gallery, and they were in on the legislative plaza. We wanted to recognize them, tell them that we saw them and we heard them and we cared about their issues. And so we went to the well to speak without permission and speak for those in our district who wanted gun sense reform. And because of that, they moved to expel all three of us.
This is, correct me if I'm wrong here, Representative Johnson, but this really isn't about what you had to say and where you had to say it. It's really about guns, isn't it? In Tennessee, isn't that it that you had more than the fact that you're on the floor with a megaphone? The issue really is that you had the audacity to speak out against guns.
Right. We wanted to speak out against guns in a state that is pretty much run by the NRA and the Tennessee Firearms Association. And we wanted to make the demands of the citizens of the state. You know, I polled this last year in my district, and a majority of Republicans, a majority of independents, and a majority of Democrats want gun sense legislation to keep our community safer. They are asking for it, but our MAGA supermajority is refusing to listen, and they're even refusing to have the discussion.
It's incredible to me. First of all, Tennessee, this is not the image I have of Tennessee. My brother went to Vanderbilt University, and I've spent many, many wonderful days in Nashville. It's really the only part of the state I've ever spent any time in. But I've always thought of it as a wonderful place. But as I've done some research, I found that there's a dark underlying history in Tennessee. It's not only about guns, it's about racism too, isn't it? That two black legislators were expelled and you as the only white person were not?
Absolutely. And it's very apparent. You can hear it in the language in our body when we're in committee, when we are on the House floor. It's very clear that our black members are spoken to differently than white members, and especially these two new younger black men. I think that with a combination of their younger age and the fact that they are black, they are certainly treated less than in this body. And it's horrifying to me that that is happening, because their voices are so strong and so powerful. They're so smart. They're so informed on policy. They are passionate about the issues, and they are passionate about speaking up for their districts. And the idea that each of us were elected by 70,000 voters, the 70,000 voters that sent them are the same ones that sent the speaker to this body. So the voices of their constituents are equally as important as any other district in the state, and they deserve to be heard.
Well, and, this seems all very complicated, I think, to all of us, how they now... Both of them are now back in the legislature temporarily. Is that not true that they were through? I'm not exactly even sure what the mechanism was, but that they're both back in until a special election.
Yes, that's correct. Both of them come from heavily Democratic counties. And so it's their county bodies that choose. When we have an open seat, their county bodies choose who they want to fill that seat, and they overwhelmingly chose those two young men to come back, and that's what happened. And then in a couple of months, we'll have to have a special election. It will cost our state a lot of money to have these two special elections, and I'm imagining that they won't even have a challenger. They'll have to run a race for those two unchallenged, costing those counties in the state money that we didn't have to spend.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. I mean, I would think after 40 years in politics, that I've been in politics 40 years, I would think that, first of all, their constituents are probably outraged. And second of all, even if they did have challengers, they would win. So in the end, you will, the people that were trying to, rebuke them, will have gained nothing. They'll be back in the legislature.
And they're very frustrated that I think that they miscalculated in their math. I think they meant to expel me, but that doesn't mean it wasn't still racist, because the way that they questioned and talked to those two young men, those two black members, was completely different than the manner in which they spoke to me. And that happens on the floor all the time. The interesting thing is, if they had expelled me, I come from a red county. There are only two Democrats and 9 Republicans on our county commission. And our county mayor, who is a Republican, had already said he would be appointing a Republican if I was expelled.
Yeah, that's very interesting. In D.C., we have just the opposite. There are no Republicans. Uh-huh. There are no Republicans in D.C. We're all Democrats. But let's move on a little bit and talk about guns in general.
Sure.
I assume that Tennessee has very, very liberal gun laws. And the district, we have very tight gun laws. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're loosening them every session. We had multiple bills. We had a bill, we now have a open carry, open concealed carry. Anybody can carry. No more do you need a gun license. We used to have that system. It worked well, but they said no more. You don't have to prove you know how to use a gun or know about gun use. Anybody can carry anytime, anywhere. And this year, the age was 21 and up. This year, they moved to lower the age to 18. They're also trying to get a more clear constitutional carry. They say that ours is still not conservative enough, that we need to allow open carry of long guns and all these other things. So even though we think that we are a state that is proliferating guns and gun use, they're still trying to add more. We tried to get some legislation that about safe storage, about guns, because we allow guns in cars. And much of the gun violence is being caused from people get weapons from stealing from others' cars. They're getting the guns from cars. And we're trying to limit that as well. But it's very difficult in the state to fight the NRA and to fight the Tennessee Firearms Association.
Well, let me ask you, I mean, my understanding, first of all, I have to say we've had 167 mass shootings since the beginning of this year.
Right.
That's one and a half every day. I mean, it's amazing. We're only in the 111th day of the year, but we've had 167 mass shootings. Now, in mm-hmm. the Covenant school case, and by the way, we should say this before we go any further, that let people know, in case you don't know, it was a horrible situation in which seven people were killed, 3 9-year-olds, 3 adults who worked at the school, and the shooter himself. But my understanding was the shooter bought the gun legally. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct. But it was also known that the parents knew that the shooter did have some emotional issues, I believe. And but the parents were not aware that the shooter had guns. Yeah. But it wasn't a child. It was a 28-year-old. So
yeah.
There is that. And that's one of those situations when people close to you know, and they know you have guns. There are things we can do about that, like red flag laws. We can have safe storage laws. There's all kinds of things that we can do to prevent guns from being in the hands of dangerous people. And the fact that gun violence is the number one killer of our children now, it's remarkable to me that we are doing nothing.
Well, and it's crazy, too, because not only because of that, but because most people think that we need some sort of gun. I mean, I hate to use the word gun control because it's such a, it infuriates people on the other side. But we do need, I mean, the majority of people think that AR-15 rifles should be banned. I just don't get why we don't, if we have the political will to do it, if we have right. I think, in fact, that's something that you said on a podcast with Molly Chung, is that we could do this if we had the political will. So we have the political backing. Why don't we have the political will?
Yeah, exactly. When there was just a poll, I think it was a statewide poll that was just done that said 70% of Tennesseans want gun sense legislation like red flag laws, and specifically red flag laws. So we've got polling. We know it's what the people want. However, our supermajority is ignoring the will of the people, and they're siding with the special interest lobbyists, the billionaires and millionaires that are funding their campaigns. Yesterday, the Tennessee Firearms Association were here in the building. They had their assault weapon pins on. They had flyers that they were passing out to the Republican members, and they were even, what I'm told, is they were harassing some of the women that were here, the mothers that were here against gun violence. And so they're very prominent. They're being seen. They made threats that they would not support legislators who brought forth any gun violence legislation. So it's really, really tricky.
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe that any American is wearing an assault rifle pin, that they're promoting assault rifles. I don't even know what the – I mean, where do we end this? If you can have an AR-15 rifle, why can't you have grenades or a tank or a missile launcher?
I think the Tennessee Republicans would agree with you on that. I think they would. They would say that out loud. I'm certain they would. Some have.
It's just crazy. And, you know, here again in the District of Columbia, we have very tight gun laws. And we spend an inordinate amount of time. Our representative in the House of Representatives, Eleanor Holmes Norton, has spent an inordinate amount of time in her career defending those rights. And you probably know that one of the landmark cases before the Supreme Court, Heller versus the
Heller
District
case.
Of Columbia. Yeah, the Heller case was really, kind of a pivotal case. Does the federal government need to intervene? You know, when in the South, when in Georgia and Alabama and Mississippi, maybe also in Tennessee, when they refused to segregate the schools, the federal government moved in. Is this a crisis that the federal government needs to be more involved in? Do they need to move in?
You know, I don't know. I'd like to have some support from the federal government just in bringing this issue, you know, with the president, with the vice president, bringing this issue forward and keeping the momentum going, because I really feel like we have got so many thousands of people active now in this state on this issue, and they're showing up at the Capitol every day. This state has a lot of resistance to federal pressure in that manner. I would like to see the federal government also pass some gun sense legislation. But, you know, our guys here have gone so far as to pass resolutions saying that we will ignore any federal laws on guns in our state, which, of course, is unconstitutional, but that doesn't stop them from doing that. What I would like to see is us, by the sheer numbers of people coming forth every day, see us force our own state to do what is right to keep communities and children safe.
You know, I just did some cursory investigation on the internet. There have been 6 mass shootings in Memphis alone since the beginning of the year.
Right.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we're a state that has a serious gun violence problem. And you see in a lot of the red states with a lot of lax gun legislation that allows guns everywhere, that's not uncommon. We have higher incidents. And that's why we need to look at that. You know, and just after the shooting at Covenant, wasn't too long where Kentucky had the shooting at the bank.
Right.
And we just did a human chain with almost 9,000 people. We had a human chain from Vanderbilt Hospital to the legislature of people in support of doing something about gun violence. Wow. And several of our colleagues from the Kentucky State House and the Kentucky State Senate came down because they want to collaborate with us and, you know, figure out what we can do and share ideas back and forth and all of that. But, you know, they said they were really getting pushed back in talking about the shooting. People were saying it's too soon to talk about. And I told them, I said, well, people will always tell you it's too soon. But if you wait 2 days, there's another mass shooting. So how is it too soon? It's actually too late to be talking about it.
Well, as somebody that was a teacher for 27 years, I don't know if you have any insight into this, but there's something that's different. I know that you were raised in Tennessee, so I assume you were raised around guns. I was raised around guns. Nobody ever thought about walking into a school that I attended and shooting people. I grew up in North New Jersey, which was arguably at the time one of the most dangerous cities in America. But I didn't have a police officer in my school. I didn't have, you know, there wasn't any need for any of this. So what do you think's changed in our society that's led to this? Are these just people acting out that want attention? Do you have any sense of that?
No, that's not what I think at all. I think it's policy in Tennessee. We have not expanded Medicaid. We have so many people that have no access to mental health care. We are keeping wages low. We have the federal minimum wage here in Tennessee. People, we have 20 to 25% of our kids go to bed hungry every night. People get desperate when they don't have health care, when they don't have mental health care, when they don't have the food they need to survive. We are privatizing our public education. And so many of the policies here are what leads people to desperation. And the reality is we are doing nothing in Tennessee to prevent gun violence. You know, for me as an educator, the folks here, what they want to do is put more and more security in our schools. And keeping having our schools secure is important. We had a member here say, well, we'll put a tank in front of every school if we need it. Well, that's ridiculous. Because what they are advocating for the guns to come to the schoolhouse for a gun battle. And yeah. I say, prevent the guns from ever getting to the schoolhouse door. If you want to fix this problem, prevent the guns from ever getting to the schoolhouse. Because if the guns get to the door, there's going to be injury and potentially loss of life. So why are we not doing prevention instead of expecting a battle at the schoolhouse? They also are trying to arm teachers here.
I know that's
ludicrous.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. My wife's a teacher in Virginia, and they mentioned, you know, and that came up in the Virginia legislature at one point. My wife doesn't want to have a gun. She gets mad at me, so I don't want her having a gun for my own protection. It's crazy. I remember at one time there was talk about arming pilots when the hijackings were going on. They were going to arm our pilots. I mean,
yeah,
this stuff is crazy.
More guns is not the solution. And the idea of a teacher, you know, having a gun on them when, you know, they're could be teaching high school teenagers in the room.
Yeah.
And if you hear something, are you going to leave your class? You're teaching second graders. Are you going to leave your class because you hear something down the hall? Doesn't that put your class at risk, at more risk? And teachers already do four jobs. They're teachers, they're social workers, they're nurses, and sometimes parents. So you're going to ask them to take on another job of security? Are they going to get another salary for that? Because they're already only getting one salary, and it's not enough.
Well, that's absolutely true. And you know, as the husband of a teacher, I have to say I agree with you 100% on all of that. You know, there was an incident at my wife's school recently where a fight broke out and a gun fell out of a kid's backpack. Well, the gun, it turns out, was, I don't know if it was a BB gun or some kind of non-lethal weapon. But there was a school resource officer, a police officer, and you know, gun advocates were saying, "Oh well, the gun wasn't even a real gun," but the cop wouldn't have known that if he'd come upon the scene and seen the kid pick up the gun. He might have shot and killed the kid. He would have never known that it was a pellet gun or a BB gun or whatever the hell it was. I think the argument has really become ridiculous in some cases.
I think it's definitely ridiculous. And when we know that in shootout situation with the police, you know, their accuracy is below 30%. So think about accuracy with a teacher and think about all the people in the room, all the children in the room while this is happening. It's ludicrous. It's not a solution, and it's I think I would just be embarrassed if that was the only argument I had. It would just be embarrassing. I think that's an embarrassing argument.
Yeah, it really is. And you know, as somebody that had three teenagers in my house at one time, you know, I would say my children were lucky that I didn't have access to firearms. But moving on, what do you think we can do? You know, is that what we need to do? We need more public pressure on people like legislators and congressmen and senators. We need more pressure on them to counteract the money that comes from the NRA. Is that what these guys get, to get money and support from the NRA?
I think that's what's going to work in Tennessee. I think they need to see that their vote count is threatened. You know, they worry about threatening lack of donations to their campaign from these gun organizations. But the way to counter that is with people saying that they will not vote for them unless they vote for common sense gun laws. And I think that they're so power hungry that the threat of losing their seat is powerful. And I think that they need to see mass numbers coming out and telling them this is what they want to see, or they're going to vote for somebody else. So we want to continue this movement, build this movement. The young people are doing a great job keeping it going. But just to make sure, show them in 2024 that their actions have consequences, and there are people going to the polling place that will not forget about this issue.
I know that people that want guns, first of all, it's very complex group of people, is it not? I mean, I've heard things like 90% of the guns are owned by 10% of the people, but I assume that fear plays a role in this, that people are afraid. And I would think that there's some underlying racism that adds to that fear and that anxiety. What can we do about that, do you think? Because, you know, I was lucky. Representative, I grew up in a family where my father was the most egalitarian man I ever met. He believed that all people, you know, didn't matter what sex you were, what race you were. And then my mother's family was the traditional, believed in every stereotype about every ethnic group. And I know that they were afraid. They were afraid of Black people. They were afraid of people that were different than them. How much of a role do you think that plays in the violence and the need that people feel to have guns?
Well, that's interesting. That's something I've been thinking about, because these same folks who are trying to marginalize our LGBTQ community, our Black and Brown communities, they seem to be very fearful of the fact that these people exist.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they talk about this need for protection and this need. You know, I don't feel that need. I have a gun, and I have it because it was my father's service revolver. He was in the FBI, and I have that gun. And so I learn how to use it. I shoot regularly, and I store it safely. But I'm not afraid when I go out of the house. You know, I love people that look different than me, or have a different, speak a different language than me. And you know, I just think that's what makes this country great, is going out and meeting all different kinds of people. But some of my colleagues seem to be afraid of absolutely everybody who doesn't look and dress and act and talk like them and believe like them.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And you know, and that maybe that contributes to their need to think that they need to protect themselves. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel the same way. And I certainly, like I said, I grew up around guns. I knew people that had guns. My mother wouldn't have my father's service revolver in the house, because after the Second World War, you know, everybody was allowed to keep their service revolvers. And there were a series of children who were hurt with those guns because they weren't stored safely, or they weren't, you know. So my mother made my father get rid of all these guns, and I never had a gun for the same reason. But yeah, I feel safe when I go out. Maybe it's because I was trained. Do we need some training? Because I was trained as a little kid and living in a bad neighborhood to use the most important weapon that any of us have, and that's our brains.
Right.
Not to park in a dark alley in a bad neighborhood, or to make sure I was with more than one person when I went out late at night, or, you know. And I can tell you, I've been involved in a couple of situations, even one that involved a gun, where I talked my way out of it using my head, where I made the perpetrator think that you know, he followed me down a dark alley to my apartment and asked me, you know, tried to get in, asking me for something. And I said to him, I'm sorry, I live with two firemen and a policeman, and they're all asleep right now. And, you know, and I'm sure the guy thought, and I don't want to wake him up, I'm sure the guy thought, well, that may or may not be true, but why take the chance?
why risk it?
Yeah, and he backed off. I called the police, and they arrested him with a gun. He actually pulled the gun on the policeman. Using your head, you know, I was taught very early on. Your head was it's funny when I called the police, they said to me, "Well, that's unusual. Most people, once they get inside the house, lock the door." They said, "You're a very good citizen." And I said to them, "I'm not a good citizen. This is the way I was trained, that if you didn't call and report the guy trying to rob your neighbor, he'd be back tomorrow to rob you." You know,
that's
what we thought about it.
Absolutely.
And it was that sense in the community that, you know, we all stood up for each other. And we didn't need guns to do it.
And that's what this is about. You know, all these moms that are out here and these dads, these parents with their kids, it's all about, we're trying to protect our community. And it is such a great community feeling. This protest has been so positive in a lot of ways, with a lot of singing and chanting and just making friends and allies and fighting for this issue. That's why I think it's not going to go away. We're going to continue to build this movement. We're going to continue to push this issue, and we're going to make the Tennessee supermajority understand that it's not just one party that wants this. This isn't left or right. This is right or wrong. And gun sense legislation is right.
That's an excellent way to put it. You know, and I got to tell you, on my many trips, like I said, I have been to Knoxville, and I have been to other places in Tennessee, but mostly I've spent time in Nashville. I don't think I've ever met a mean person in Tennessee. So that's why all this, I find this so surprising. It really, I can't tell you how many people I've recommended going to Nashville, because I think it's such a wonderful city.
Yeah.
And the wonderful people, and you know, and I admire you so much, Representative, for standing up for this. And, you know, especially coming from a red district, I know how hard it is. You know, I've been on the campaign trail many times, and it's hard when voters ask your opinion, for example, to stand up and tell the truth, even though you know it's not their truth. And they're you know, and you're going to lose their vote. But so I admire that very much about you.
Yeah. And a lot of times, you know, I have a lot of supporters who are Republicans, and they will tell me, you know, that I won't always agree with you, Gloria, but I know that you'll listen to me. And I know that we can have a thoughtful conversation about, you know, why I support this or why you support this. And I do have a lot of support from across the aisle, because I will listen to all opinions, and I don't, you know, they know that they will be heard. Even if we don't agree, they know that I will hear them and I will consider.
Yeah. And, you know, it's important, I think, for us to build community in order to address this problem. I want to tell you that, by the way, I don't want to digress here too much, but I looked at some of your campaign commercials, and I love the commercial you did about getting out of bed every day. I just thought that I just thought that was so brilliant, right? Because it's the same old, and we need to change that. And I just thought that it's most of my time in politics has been as a campaigner. I've worked on 6 presidential campaigns, and so wow. I really admire anybody that's creative and smart about it. And also, let me add that I noticed that you were endorsed by the Teamsters, and I'm a former Teamster, and I certainly would endorse you as well. So what do you see for the future, Representative? What do you think? How do you see this going forward? These two guys, good young legislators, are going to get back into the Tennessee legislature. And how many people are there in the state house? How many representatives?
So we have 99 representatives and 33 senators. So there are 99 of us. And those two young men's voices are really critical in Tennessee right now. So I'm so glad that those voices will be back, and we need more like them for sure. But what we plan to do, we plan to go around the state and raise the issue of gun sense legislation and go into, we have a lot of counties in Tennessee that have no Democratic representation. There's no one coming to talk to them about how we can end gun violence. So we're going to go around to these counties who don't often hear these ideas and share these ideas and try to, you know, bring them into the movement of making sure that we get something done in the legislature next session.
What about holding gun manufacturers responsible? Do you think there's any way we can pass laws to hold them responsible? You know, another thing that I really don't understand is that I own a car and that I have to have, first of all, I had to show proficiency in driving in order to get a license to drive that car. Then I had to register that car. Then I had to get insurance on the car, not to protect me, but to protect you in case I run into you. You know, why can't we do the same thing with guns? Why can't we just get, you know, register? Because the NRA narrative is that all we want to do is take away your guns. Is that right?
Yeah, they see they put everything, paint everything as a slippery slope. But we had up until just a couple of years ago, you had to have a license to carry a gun. You took an 8-hour course, you did the shooting test, and if you passed those things, you could get your license. But in reference to your earlier statement about holding gun manufacturers accountable, as a matter of fact, just went through the Senate yesterday or day before a bill that did the exact opposite and released gun manufacturers of any liability whatsoever in Tennessee.
It's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy because they push them. Look, I've done a little bit of research. I'm no expert on this at all, but I found quickly on the internet, guns that are made for women, guns that now come in, and you can get them in designer colors. They're pink, you know. And we're so worried about, you know, marketing smoking devices to children, you know, and making candy flavored, whatever. But we're not worried about this. And we worry about saving our kids from TikTok, but we're not going to save them from gun violence. I mean, it seems crazy to me. So do you think there's any a gun should look like a gun in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know.
Absolutely. It looks like, Senator Brown, that we are going back into session. So is it okay if we end here so I can get back to the floor?
Of course. And thanks so much for your time. We really, really appreciate it. And as the gun you know, as we move on through these things in our society, we hope to come back and talk to us again. But thank you so much, Representative Gloria Johnson. I wish you all the best, and thanks for being so brave and standing up and fighting a good fight.
Oh, and absolutely. And thank you so much for caring about this issue and for bringing me on. I just really appreciate that. It's such an important issue for all of us and for all across the state and the country. So just any more attention that we're getting here in Tennessee on this issue is incredibly valuable. And I thank you so much.
Well, that's great. Best of luck, Representative. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. We'll see ya. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. Okay, folks, so that was Representative Gloria Johnson. I'm going to talk a few minutes because she had to leave early to get back on the floor of the House. And oh, my God, do we need people like her on the floor of the House in Tennessee. Her vote's very important. But, you know, we all got to do something about gun violence. I mean, we can't stand as a nation anymore and tolerate this. Nobody wants to take guns away from law-abiding citizens. Nobody wants to take guns that can be used for protection against law-abiding citizens. But this is getting out of hand. You know, look at this young black man from Missouri who was shot in the head because he knocked on the wrong door. Oh, my God. Has anybody seen his picture? He looks like a choir boy. You know, the last thing that I would think if this young man approached me was that he was going to do any harm to me. He just looked like an angel. And yet we've gotten so paranoid in our society that you can't knock on the wrong door. Or how about the cheerleader in a cheerleader outfit who was shot because he walked up to the wrong car? Or the person that was shot because they pulled into the wrong driveway? What's wrong with America? Why can't we be brave like we were when I grew up? There were people with guns around me. Nobody ever shot anybody or you know, thought about going into a shopping center or a grocery store or, God forbid, an elementary school and killing people. That wasn't part of the American mindset. What has changed in America? Why don't we trust each other enough and trust the people that we put in law enforcement to keep us safe? Is it because we don't talk to each other anymore? Is it because we associate now, instead of with each other, we associate with a thing called the internet, where every ridiculous idea in the universe can play out and people can become paranoid? And I mean, I don't care how ridiculous your opinion is about anything, you can find somebody on the internet to agree with you. So do we have to do things to control what we see and what our children see and how they act out? And how is it that mentally ill people keep on getting their hands on guns? Did you listen to that doctor from Tennessee who was on TV talking about what happened to these 9-year-old children, that they were blown apart, that there was an incident in the school shooting in Texas where they couldn't even identify the children? They had to identify them by their tennis shoes. What is wrong with us, America? Why can't we end this violence? Why can't we stand up like Gloria Johnson and others have, you know, the kids from Parkland? When kids from a school in Florida can bring thousands of people to march on the Capitol, I was part of the march that the Parkland kids put together a few years ago. And in a couple of days, they were able to garner thousands and thousands of people in the street. Well, we need to do more of that. We need to have millions and millions of Americans in the street. And everybody that has a child, everybody who believes in this country and what it stands for, needs to stand up and have their voices heard. You need to write to your representatives. You need to come out to rallies because this is a crisis. And if it can happen in Tennessee, if it can happen in little towns in Texas and all over America, it can happen anywhere. So we need to get together and stand up and once and for all end this craziness with guns. The NRA, in my opinion, I'd like to see them abolished. They are not, let me make this very clear, they are not about gun safety. They're not about education. They're nothing more than a industry lobby group whose sole purpose is to sell more guns. They don't want to keep you safe. They don't want to teach you how to use a gun. All they want is to sell more guns so that they can make more profits. Well, it's time for us to say you've made enough profits on dead children in America. This needs to stop. And that's all I have to say today. I hope you join us next week. I want to play a song now from, it's a song, a gospel song, which I love, called Maybe God Is Trying to Tell You Something. Hey, people in Tennessee, maybe God is trying to tell you something. Thanks. We'll see you next week.